Short stories from the worlds of speculative fiction. Is The Winner by Donald E. Westlake. A story copyright 1970 by Harry Harrison from Nova One. Wordman stood at the window looking out and saw Ravel walk away from the compound, and he said to the interviewer,
"Come here. You'll see the Guardian in action."
The interviewer came around the desk and stood beside Wordman at the window and said,
That's one of them?
Right.
Wordman smiled, feeling pleasure.
You're lucky. It's rare when one of them even makes the attempt. Maybe he's doing it for your benefit.
The interviewer looked troubled and said,
Doesn't he know what it'll do?
Of course. Some of them don't believe it, not till they've tried it once. Watch.
They both watched. Ravel walked without apparent haste directly across the field toward the woods on the other side. After he'd gone about 200 yards from the edge of the compound, he began to bend forward slightly at the middle, and a few yards farther on, he folded his arms across his stomach as though it ached him. He tottered, but kept moving forward, staggering more and more, appearing to be in great pain. He managed to stay on his feet nearly all the way to the trees, but finally crumpled to the ground, where he lay unmoving. The Wordman no longer felt pleasure. He liked the theory of the Guardian better than its application. And turning to his desk, he called the infirmary and said,
"Send a stretcher out to the east, near the woods. Ravel's out there."
The interviewer turned at the sound of the name, saying,
Ravel, is that who that is, the poet?
If you can call it poetry.
Wordman's lip curled in disgust. He'd read some of Ravel's so-called poems. Garbage, garbage. The interviewer looked back out the window.
I had heard that Ravel was arrested.
Looking over the interviewer's shoulder, Wordman saw that Ravel had managed to get back up onto hands and knees and was now crawling slowly and painfully toward the woods. But a stretcher team was already trotting toward him, and Wordman watched as they reached him, picked up the pain-weakened body, strapped it to the stretcher, and carried it back to the compound. As they moved out of sight, the interviewer said,
Well, will he be all right?
After a few days in the infirmary, he'll strain some muscles.
That was a very graphic display.
You're the first outsider to see it.
Wordman smiled and felt good again.
What do they call that, a scoop?
A scoop.
They returned to the interview, just the most recent of dozens that Wordman had given in the year since this pilot project of the Guardian had been set up. For perhaps the 50th time, he explained what the Guardian did and how it was of value to society. The essence of the Guardian was the miniature black box, actually a tiny radio receiver, which was surgically inserted into the body of every prisoner. In the center of this prison compound was the Guardian transmitter, perpetually sending its message to these receivers. As long as a prisoner stayed within the 150-yard range of the transmitter, all was well. Should he move beyond that range, the black box inside his skin would begin to send messages of pain throughout his nervous system. This pain increased as the prisoner moved farther from the transmitter until at its peak. It was totally immobilizing.
The prisoner can't hide, you see. Even if Ravel had reached the woods, we'd have found him. His screams would have led us to him.
The guardian had been initially suggested by Wordman himself, at the time serving as assistant warden at a more ordinary penitentiary in the federal system. Objections, mostly from sentimentalists, had delayed its acceptance for several years. But now at last, this pilot project had been established with a guaranteed 5-year trial period, and Wordman had been placed in charge.
If the results are as good as I'm sure they will be, all prisons in the federal system will be converted to the Guardian method.
The Guardian method had made jailbreaks impossible, riots easy to quell by merely turning off the transmitter for a minute or two, and prisons simplicity to guard.
We have no guards here as such. Service employees only are needed here. People for the mess hall, infirmary, and so on.
For the pilot project, prisoners were only those who had committed crimes against the state rather than against individuals.
You might say that here are gathered the disloyal opposition.
You mean political prisoners?
We don't like that phrase here. It sounds commie.
The interviewer apologized for his sloppy use of terminology, ended the interview shortly afterward, and Wordman, once again in a good mood, escorted him out of the building.
You see, no walls, no machine guns in towers. Here, at last, is the model prison.
The interviewer thanked him again for his time and went away to his car. Wordman watched him leave, then went over to the infirmary to see Ravel, but he'd been given a shot and was already asleep. Ravel lay flat on his back and stared at the ceiling. He kept thinking over and over again.
I didn't know it would be as bad as that. I didn't know it would be as bad as that.
Mentally, he took a big brush of black paint and wrote the words on the spotless white ceiling.
I didn't know it would be as bad as that.
Ravel!
He turned his head slightly and saw a Wordman standing beside the bed. He watched Wordman, but made no sign.
They told me you were awake.
Ravel waited.
I tried to tell you when you first came. I told you there was no point trying to get away.
No, it's all right. Don't feel bad. You do what you have to do. I do what I have to do.
Don't feel bad? What have I got to feel bad about?
Ravel looked up at the ceiling, and the words he had painted there just a minute ago were gone already. He wished he had paper and pencil. Words were leaking out of him like water through a sieve. He needed paper and pencil to catch them in, and he said,
"May I have paper and pencil?"
"To write more obscenity? Of course not."
"Of course not,"
echoed Ravel. He closed his eyes and watched the words leaking away. A man doesn't have time both to invent and memorize. He has to choose. And long ago, Ravel had chosen invention. But now there was no way to put the inventions down on paper, and they trickled through his mind like water. And he wrote it away into the great outside world.
Twinkle, twinkle, little pain in my groin and in my brain. Down so low and up so high. Will you live or will I die?
The pain goes away. It's been 3 days. It should be gone already.
Oh, it will come back.
Ravel opened his eyes and wrote the words on the ceiling.
It will come back.
Don't be silly. It's gone for good. Unless you run away again.
Ravel was silent. Wordman waited, half smiling. Then he frowned.
You aren't.
Of course I am. Didn't you know I would?
No one tries it twice.
I'll never stop leaving. Don't you know that? I'll never stop leaving. I'll never stop being. I'll not stop believing in who I must be. You had to know that.
You'll go through it again?
Ever and ever.
It's a bluff. If you want to die, I'll let you die. You know, if we don't bring you back, you will die out there?
That's escape, too.
Is that what you want? All right. Go out there again, and I won't send anyone after you. That's a promise.
Then you'll lose.
Revell looked at Wordman finally and saw the blunt, angry face.
They're your rules, and by your own rules, you're gonna lose. You say your black box will make me stay, and that means the black box will make me stop being me. I say you're wrong. I say as long as I'm leaving, you're losing. And if the black box kills me, you've lost forever.
Do you think this is a game?
Of course. That's why you invented it.
You're insane.
Wordman started for the door.
You shouldn't be here. You should be in an asylum.
That's losing, too.
Revell said after him, but Wordman had slammed the door and was gone. Revell lay back on the pillow, alone again. He could dwell once more on his terrors. He was afraid of the black box, much more now that he knew what it could do to him, afraid to the point where his fear made him sick to his stomach. But he was afraid of losing himself, too. This is a more abstract and intellectual fear, but just as strong. No, it was even stronger because it was driving him to go out again.
But I didn't know it would be as bad as that.
And he painted it once more on the ceiling, this time in red. Wordman had been told when Revell would be released from the infirmary, and he made a point of being at the door when Revell came out. Revell seemed somewhat leaner, perhaps a little older. He shielded his eyes from the sun with his hand, looked at Wordman and said,
"Goodbye, Wordman."
And he started walking east. Wordman didn't believe it, and he said,
"You're bluffing, Revell."
Revell kept walking. Wordman couldn't remember when he'd ever felt such anger. He wanted to run after Revell and kill him with his bare hands. He clenched his hands into fists and told himself he was a reasonable man, a rational man, a merciful man, as the Guardian was reasonable, was rational, was merciful. It required only obedience, and so did he. It punished only such purposeless defiance as Revell's, and so did he. Revell was antisocial, self-destructive. He had to learn, for his own sake, as well as for the sake of society. Revell had to be taught.
"What are you trying to get out of this?"
He glared at Revell's moving back, listened to Revell's silence.
"I won't send anyone after you. You'll crawl back yourself."
Wordman kept watching until Revell was far out from the compound, staggering across the field toward the trees, his arms folded across his stomach, his legs stumbling, his head bent forward. Wordman watched, and then gritted his teeth and turned his back and returned to his office to work on the monthly report. Only two attempted escapes last month. Two or three times in the course of the afternoon, he looked out the window. The first time he saw Revell far across the field on hands and knees, crawling toward the trees. The last time, Revell was out of sight, but he could be heard screaming. The Wordman had a great deal of trouble concentrating his attention on the report. Toward evening, he went outside again. Revell's screams sounded from the woods, faint but continuous. Wordman stood listening, his fists clenching and relaxing at his sides. Grimly, he forced himself not to feel pity. For Revell's own good, he had to be taught. A staff doctor came to him a while later and said,
Mr. Wordman, we've got to bring him in.
I know, but I want to be sure he's learned.
For God's sake, man, listen.
All right. Bring him in.
As the doctor started away, the screaming stopped. Wordman and the doctor both turned their heads, listened. Silence. The doctor ran for the infirmary. Revell lay screaming. All he could think of was the pain and the need to scream. But sometimes when he managed to scream at the very loudest, it was possible for him to have a fraction of a second for himself. And in those fractions of seconds, he still kept moving away from the prison, inching along the ground, so that in the last hour he had moved approximately 7 feet. His head and right arm were now visible from the country road that passed through these woods. On one level, he was conscious of nothing but the pain and his own screaming. On another level, he was totally, even insistently, aware of everything around him. The blades of grass near his eyes, the stillness of the woods, the tree branches high overhead, and the small pickup truck when it stopped on the road beyond him. The man who came over from the truck and squatted beside Revell had a lined and weathered face,
in the rough clothing of a farmer, he touched Ravel's shoulder and he said,
"You hurt, fella?"
East.
Is it okay to move you?
Yes, east.
I'd best take you to a doctor.
There was no change in the pain when the man lifted him and carried him to the truck and lay him down on the floor and back. He was already at optimum distance from the transmitter. The pain now was as bad as it could get. The farmer tucked a rolled up wad of cloth into Ravel's open mouth.
Bite on this. It'll make it easier.
It made nothing easier, but it muffled his screams. Ravel was grateful for that. The screams embarrassed him. He was aware of it all. The drive through increasing darkness, the farmer carrying him into a building that was of colonial design on the outside but looked like the infirmary on the inside, and a doctor who looked down at him and touched his forehead and then went to one side to thank the farmer for bringing him. They spoke briefly over there, and then the farmer went away and the doctor came back to look at Ravel again. He was young, dressed in laboratory white with a pudgy face and red hair. He seemed sick and angry, and he said, "You're from the prison, aren't you?" Ravel was still screaming through the cloth. He managed a head spasm, which he meant to be a nod. His armpits felt as though they were being cut open with knives of ice. The sides of his neck were being scraped by sandpaper. All of his joints were being ground back and forth, the way a man at dinner separates the bones of a chicken wing. The interior of his stomach was full of acid. His body was stuck with needles sprayed with fire. His skin was being peeled off. His nerves cut with razor blades. His muscles pounded with hammers. Thumbs were pushing his eyes out from inside his head. And yet, the genius of this pain, the brilliance that had gone into its construction, it permitted his mind to work, to remain constantly aware. There was no unconsciousness for him, no oblivion. The doctor said, "What beasts some men are. I'll try to get this out of you. I don't know what'll happen. We aren't supposed to know how it works, but I'll try to take the box out of you." He went away and came back with a needle. Here, this will put you to sleep.
He isn't there. He just isn't anywhere in the woods.
Wordman glared at the doctor, but knew he had to accept what the man reported.
All right, someone took him away. He had a Confederate out there. Someone who helped him get away.
No one would dare. Anyone who helped him would wind up here themselves.
Nevertheless, I'll call the state police.
Wordman went on into his office. 2 hours later, the state police called back. They had checked the normal users of that road, local people who might have seen or heard something. They had found a farmer who'd picked up an injured man near the prison and taken him to a Dr. Allen in Boontown. The state police were convinced the farmer had acted innocently.
But not the doctor. He'd have to know the truth almost immediately.
Yes, sir, I should think so.
And he hasn't reported Ravel?
No, sir.
Have you gone to pick him up yet?
Not yet. We just got the report.
I'll want to come with you. Wait for me.
Yes, sir.
Wordman traveled in the ambulance in which they'd bring Ravel back. They arrived without a siren at Dr. Allen's with two cars of state troopers, marched into the tiny operating room and found Allen washing instruments at the sink. Allen looked at all of them calmly and said, "Well, I thought you might be along." Wordman pointed at the man who lay unconscious on the table in the middle of the room.
"There's Ravel."
Allen glanced at the operating table in surprise.
Ravel, the poet?
You didn't know? Then why help him?
Instead of answering, Dr. Allen studied his face and said, "Would you be Wordman himself?"
"Yes, I am."
"Then I believe this is yours."
And Allen put into Wordman's hands a small and bloody black box. The ceiling was persistently bare. Ravel's eyes wrote on it words that should have singed the paint away, but nothing ever happened. He shut his eyes against the white at last and wrote in spidery letters on the inside of his lids the single word, oblivion.
He heard someone come into the room, but the effort of making a change was so great that for a moment longer he permitted his eyes to remain closed. When he did open them, he saw Wordman there, standing grim and mundane at the foot of the bed.
How are you, Ravel?
I was thinking about oblivion, writing a poem on the subject.
He looked up at the ceiling, but it was empty.
You asked one time. You asked for paper and pencil. We've decided you can have them.
Ravel looked at him in sudden hope, but then understood.
Oh, that.
What's wrong? I said you can have pencil and paper.
I promise not to leave anymore?
Wordman's hands gripped the foot of the bed. He said,
what's the matter with you? You can't get away. You have to know that by now.
You mean I can't win? But I won't lose. It's your game, your rules, your home ground, your equipment. If I can manage a stalemate, that's pretty good.
You still think it's a game? You think none of it matters? You want to see what you've done?
Wordman stepped back to the door, opened it, made a motion, and Dr. Allen was let in.
You remember this man?
I remember.
He just arrived. They'll be putting the guardian in him in about an hour. Does that make you proud, Ravel?
I'm sorry.
Dr. Allen smiled and shook his head. But don't be. I had the idea the publicity of a trial might help rid the world of things like the Guardian. There just wasn't very much publicity.
You two are cut out of the same cloth. The emotions of the mob, that's all you can think of. Ravel, in those so-called poems of his, and you in that speech you made in court.
Oh? You made a speech. I'm really sorry I didn't get to hear it.
Well, it wasn't very good. I hadn't known the trial would only be one day long, so I didn't have much time to prepare it.
All right, that's enough. You two can talk later. You'll have years.
At the door, Allen turned back and said, don't go anywhere till I'm up and around, will you? You know, after my operation.
You want to come along next time?
Naturally. Donald Westlake. Copyright 1970 by Harry Harrison from Nova One. This is Michael Hansen. Reading with me were Cliff Roberts and Rolf Hansen. Technical operation for this broadcast by Rich Grody. MindWebs is a production of WHA Radio in Madison, a service of University of Wisconsin Extension.